Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, February the 2nd. Somehow we're already in the second month of 2026, but here we are. We got a good show for you lined up today. Stephen Fan is going to be joining us to talk about the upcoming series at Pacific Opera. So that'll be in about 20 minutes. Peter R.H. should be along fairly shortly. We have a really interesting report about a wind phone, which is a tool for managing grief, a report by Lauren McKenzie from CHLY in Nanaimo. And we're going to start a bit about the news. We have a bunch of other stuff lined up for you, too, along with some good music. all that coming up here on Speak Up for Monday. And welcome, Stephen. You just did a...
Good morning.
Just ran in here on the bus. Or
in the rain.
In the rain, yeah.
In the rain.
Just very quickly, tell us, what are you going to be talking about on...
Yeah, so the Pacific Opera, which is actually located in Victoria, British Columbia, the province's capital, they're putting on the classic opera, Tosca, by Puccini.
Awesome.
And it's considered one of the great operas of the repertoire. My understanding is that they're actually doing a very good job of it this time. So I will actually be attending the media preview, I believe, on February 16th, something like that.
Great.
And then the show itself is running between, I think, like February 17th and February 24th or like February 30th. Well, no, there's no February 30th, obviously. So like late February. I encourage everyone who's going to be in the area to attend. It's going to be fun and very affordable. It's like $50 for a ticket.
Great. We'll be talking a bit more about that in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
First, a bit about the news. Happily, we don't have too many crazy developments from the world of Trump this week. Kind of a bit of a relief. I mean, I'm sure... And you know, when I say that, I'm sort of sliding over a whole bunch of stuff that happened. It just doesn't quite raise to the wildness that
I mean, often experience. I divide Trumpian happenings into two categories.
Yep.
Now. The first category is things that actually concern me. So, you know, stuff to do with Canada, you know, 51st state,
yep.
Governor Carney, maybe, you know, also stuff to do with Greenland, because Greenland is a very unique but also in many ways similar, comparable situation as Canada. And then there's everything else. And then, you know, like, there's so much stuff happening in Trump world that you can't pay attention to them.
Yeah. So one thing that was happening in Trump world had a real local dimension, and that was... The involvement of two local companies in ICE operations, looking at contracts with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is the arm of the sort of whole immigration infrastructure that has been conducting raids throughout the United States, but in particularly high profile in Minneapolis in Wisconsin over the last several weeks, months even. With the result of two deaths of protesters and observers at the hands of ICE officers, both shot for being involved in protests there. Both American citizens, even though, of course, the focus of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is, of course, to, you know, the seizure and deportation of illegal immigrants. And so local tech company Hootsuite It came out that they were they've already been working with ICE and initiating a new contract with ICE to basically assist with their sort of social media surveillance of folks, not only searching through social media for evidence around and information around illegal aliens and their presence and locations, but also following protesters as well. This came up in the media at the beginning of last week, and really covered headlines throughout the week as people were really not pretty upset that this Canadian company, local company, was engaging in business to support what many feel are the illegal activities of customs and immigration. The other story was involved the Pattison Group. Of course, the Pattison Group is one of Canada's biggest companies, BC's biggest companies, and Jim Pattison is certainly the richest person in BC, many times over billionaire, and a big figure in the province's history over the last 40 years at least. News came out that they're preparing to sell a property in the United States to ICE that would be converted into a detention facility. And so that also created a lot of controversy and a lot of criticism of the Pattison Company. On Friday, two protests were organized, one at Hootsuite headquarters in East Van and the other at the Pattison Group headquarters. And both of them were expecting to have a good turnout. Late on Friday afternoon, the Pattison Group announced that they would not be going through with that sale. They didn't explain in detail why, but whether it was because they didn't like the bad press
they were selling it to a third party, and then the third party is selling to ICE.
Yeah.
So like, I wouldn't, I think this stuff is kind of weird. Like, there's like all sorts of different angles here.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the issue though is that people just don't like that these companies here in BC are doing business
involved with
this organization.
But like, I would also say this, like, people.
Well, let's come back to that, because I do have a bit of a piece I want to play here. and so anyway, on late Friday afternoon, it came out that the Pattison Group was going to be not going through with that sale again, whether because they didn't like the press, whether because they themselves. In their statements in the days prior to that, they indicated that they weren't directly aware of who the buyer was.
Come on.
because there was, and what it would be used for. So anyway, it was Friday, announced on Friday night that wouldn't be going through. The Hootsuite has made a number of statements explaining and justifying their actions, but their contract is at the moment. They're going to keep pursuing that. So there were protests planned. The Hootsuite went forward as a protest in light of the new news. The one at the Pattison Group turned into a bit of a celebration, So our reporter, Danny Nesvadarani, was down at Hootsuite headquarters for the protest on Friday evening, and he had a chance to talk to Emily Lowen, who is the new leader of the Green Party. She was there to make a speech, Danny had a chance to stop her for a quick interview.
I'm here at the Hootsuite headquarters with hundreds of British Columbians to protest their investment in ICE. We saw an incredible victory today with Jim Pattison pulling out of his sale of an ICE facility. And it just shows that people power works, organizing works, And when we can come together as labor unions, as working people and grassroots movements to really force the hand of these massive corporations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looks like from what we've heard today, there already has been a bit of a victory even before the next protest at a Patterson facility was supposed to happen, right?
Yeah, so I've shifted the Patterson protest to be more of a public gathering and celebration where we can, you know, discuss what just happened and the next steps. Because we are, you know, I want to see further action from Patterson on this issue. We got a one-sentence press release from them today announcing that they won't go through with the sale. But we do need to see, I think the public needs to see a full disclosure that they don't have any other pending or current sales with DHS or the Trump administration. And so we want to see that sort of transparency, disclosure, and a public commitment to freeze any future action with ICE.
Mm-hmm. Do you think provincially, on a governmental level, anything can be done to address international collaborations such as this that are overall just opposed by the general public?
Mm-hmm. Well, we absolutely need to see provincial review of corporate relationships in the province, in nationally. I would love to see more provincial or national action on this put forward a clearer policy. And I think also this has surfaced a real issue with monopoly laws in BC and in Canada. You know, Jim Patterson has an effective monopoly on much of our food supply. And so I want to see greater provincial action to break up those monopolies and deliver British Columbians good, nutritious food with public grocery stores.
Okay. Do you have anything to say to Hootsuite?
To the Hootsuite CEO. No. People have flooded the streets today demanding that you cut your contracts with ICE. But given the response, the abhorrent response from your company just days ago, I know that only economic pressure will work. So I'm demanding, encouraging that all of your contracts, whether it be companies and municipalities that do business with you, to end their contracts with Hootsuite until further action is taken.
That was Green Party leader Emily Lowen speaking with our reporter Danny Nesvadarani on Friday night at the Hootsuite headquarters, commenting on both the Hootsuite contract with ICE and also the cancellation of the Patterson Group's business dealings with ICE. And you can hear that there was quite a good turnout for that protest there, with the quite a good crowd of concerned British Columbians coming out to show what they think about these things. Go ahead. You had a comment here?
Yeah, well, I had several comments. The first thing is that, where do I start? Hootsuite is not a massive company. It's a unicorn. It's a unicorn. So, you know, it's unicorns, an internet company, like a tech company that's worth, valued at $1 billion. Is it actually worth $1 billion? I don't know. But like the thing is, I find it slightly weird that people are going around basically bugging all these like private companies, because at the end of the day, like, you know, Canadian, you know, sort of ecosystems, corporate ecosystems are fairly, they're not very robust. And I think for kind of people to be pushing all these cross pressures on them in the face of Trump, when Canada's already having these difficulties with Trump on other stuff, on China, on NAFTA renegotiation, it's not, I don't think it's helping matters greatly. But the more important question is, are you doing anything effective in terms of your goals? If your goals is to reduce, you know, U.S. or government surveillance of private social media, I would argue, I would posit that what, you know, the NSA, three other agencies, government agencies are legally able to do is much worse, much more pervasive than anything Hootsuite could even imagine. Right, you know, Hootsuite is just basically a social media management platform.
Yeah. One of the things I was watching a program this weekend just about what some of the tech companies and the government are doing. And one of the things that happens is that, you know, there's a Fourth Amendment rights about unreasonable search and seizure, and it's not exactly privacy, but, you know, they can't just scoop up all
your information. Oh, there's a carve-out. There's a carve-out.
Well, just let me finish. You know, where they... where they can't just sort of scoop up and use private information. And there's sort of these sort of links because different government agencies collect information for different reasons. And as a sort of way of protecting your privacy, there's laws against them taking, you know, information from the tax department and combining it with information from the education, you know, mixing all these things into some comprehensive database. Private companies aren't restricted from doing that kind of thing, which is up how a lot of the tech companies make money. It's all about information collecting and sharing. But government agencies in the U.S. at any way are doing things like buying the information,
yeah, so that's,
which gets them the information that they're not allowed to collect or share with.
I know what you're saying, yeah. But it's actually, I know that's in theory how it's supposed to work, but in practice what actually happens is several things. The first thing is that someone like Hootsuite, unlike Meta or Google or whatever, or they don't have access to any genuinely private information. They're just a social media management platform. So they can only do external surveillance. They don't really have access to private information. The second thing is the Fourth Amendment, which is a U.S. domestic constitutional amendment, yep, applying to U.S. domestic actions by U.S. domestic agencies, has a very specific carve-out as a result of the Cold War, original Cold War, which is that it doesn't apply to foreign intelligence agencies, allied intelligence agencies. So CSIS of Canada, MI5, MI6 of United Kingdom, the equivalent of whatever the Australian equivalent is. What has happened is through the Snowden files, if you look, it has been that essentially the NSA or the relevant U.S. government agency would forward a request or a suggestion to the relevant allied intelligence agency, whether that's MFI, whatever it is, and then they would legally snoop on Americans. There's no domestic British law preventing a British intelligence agency from snooping on Americans.
Right.
And then once
it's... But is a domestic police agency or law enforcement agency, are they allowed to make that request to foreign intelligence? You know, I understand why, you know...
That's where the line gets a little bit blurry.
Something like the CIA or the NSA, where they're operating in the sphere of international spying, let's just call it that, you know, which is a necessary part of national security for any country to understand, you know, external threats and stuff and why they can work with other agencies. But our domestic law enforcement, whether it's the FBI
or... You're talking about the Minneapolis situation.
Well, you know, at this point, just theoretically.
Well, so this is where the roll-up of all these agencies into the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, becomes sort of a relevant factor in the sense that a lot of the times that the request is made through the aegis of the DHS and then shared through the aegis of the DHS rather than individual agencies. And at that point, that line gets a little bit blurry. I do agree that there are legitimate use cases for national security and intelligence operations. But, you know, in recent years, you know, I would say the gamut has been wider rather than narrower. So it is something that people need to keep in mind. I do, you know, the ecosystem, the tech ecosystem in Canada is pretty weak as it is. Yeah. I don't know why people, you know, Jim Patterson Group, whatever, I don't really care. I don't know why people go around, you know, essentially... You know, about like going around essentially telling local tech companies they can't do business. It's tough. I know it's tough for everyone, but I'm not sure if this is the most productive use.
Right. All right. Also in the news this weekend was the passing of Catherine O'Hara, a Canadian comedy icon with a career stretching more than 40 years. She was just 71, so it was a real shock when I heard about it on Friday morning because, of course, you know, her career goes all the way back to SCTV in the early 80s through to the Home Alone series on film, and more recently with a huge career high with the big success of Schitt's Creek, which just started out as a Canadian show and was at first streaming on a not very prominent service. You know, it was on the CBC here in Canada, I think it was.
I haven't really watched it, but big props.
Yeah, and then was streaming on not a very big service in maybe not streaming, but showing on a not very big service in the U.S. And kind of operated under the radar for a while, and then it came on to Netflix, and all of a sudden it's like it got discovered big time, and became
it's like a cult classic now.
A huge hit, and of course, very much. You know, the success of that is, you know, down to Catherine O'Hara and, of course, Eugene Levy, who have worked together.
Canadian.
Yes. And, in fact, they both worked together on SCT, Second City TV, which was a sketch comedy program produced in Canada, in Toronto. Also, Martin Short came out of that and a whole bunch of other Canadian icons. John Candy all came out of that SCTV show. And if you're like me, who grew up on SCTV, you know, as a young person, I loved SCTV and all my friends, and we could quote all the funniest lines and you know, knew all the characters because there were all these skits, but there were all these recurring characters and you know, that would be appearing on the show over quite a long time. So funny. If you can, I totally recommend you check it out wherever you can. You had a...
Yeah, you were asking me earlier if I remember SCTV, and I was like, well, this is before my time. But now I actually do remember. I remember seeing clips of it.
Yeah.
I was always confused by the name Second City Television, because Second City traditionally refers to Chicago.
Yeah.
And
there's a reason for that, because... the original Second City comedy troupe was in Chicago, of course, because
right.
It is the Second City. And they were an improv comedy group. And then they set up a second instance of Second City as an improv comedy location in
Version 2.2.
In Toronto. Yeah.
Version 2.2.
And then out of that group created the TV show. And it's important to remember that the original Second City group in Toronto, you know, Second City Toronto, with the TV show and stuff, became the origin place for everybody who was on the show went on to...
Second City Squared.
Yeah, went on to huge, big careers in TV and film and comedy. But the original troupe was also where Gilda Radner came from, Dan Aykroyd, I think... Jim Belushi was also part of that. So they were also, you know, a lot of the core SNL people.
I didn't know Belushi and Aykroyd came out. Aykroyd is one.
Aykroyd's Canadian, but I think he was, because he's a little older than these
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
I think he had gone down, I hope I'm not getting it wrong, but was active with the troupe in Chicago. But part of that group, you know, American comedians also came out of that Second City scene in Toronto, or not Toronto, sorry, in the Chicago one.
Right.
And then,
right.
Like I say, they set up another one in Toronto and it became the show. So I got some clips here I want to play for you.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back with a few more words about Catherine O'Hara.
If you don't let me gut out this house and make it my own, I will go insane and I will take you with me! The one my mother gave me!
It's in the closet next to my briefcase.
That's an ostrich bag.
Ah! What? No! Ah! 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 No! Open this door, you dead people, or we'll bust it down and we'll drag you out by the ropes you hanged yourself with!
David, I have an urgent campaign-related question. I am approachable.
Is that a question?
Yes, the question is, I am approachable. You'll remember the experience, and you'll remember the name. Herb Irvling. Irv Herblinger. Bing Livehanger.
What happened to these people?
They died. Oh, look, an indoor outhouse.
I'd like to check in, please.
Oh, my God, where did you come from?
All right, just a quick... clip of some choice Catherine O'Hara bits. She passed away on Friday but as quite a surprising to everybody, reported by the family after a short illness. Of course, we hadn't really heard anything, you know. She's been busy not only with Schitt's Creek, but also an important role on Seth Rogen's comedy The Studio, for which she had a Emmy nomination. And just, you know, on a real career, another career high point. So it was quite a surprise to hear the news.
Yeah, what I want to say was that, you know, comedy and Canada are actually, there's a great sort of history there. I remember something Norm Macdonald said, which was that back when he was in Ontario, everyone went into comedy because down in the States, people would be going to the movies, the TV, and so forth. But in Ontario, there was just only comedy. So people became comedians first. And so I think that's also kind of, there's a little bit of that in how someone like Dan Aykroyd and many others came to be. Mm-hmm. You can also see the same with Seth Rogen, who went to high school just down the road from me.
Yep.
You know where I was. I think there's a great Canadian comedic tradition, right? And I think Second City is so symbolic of that. Mm-hmm. And I hope it continues. I mean, it is prospering. You know, Seth Rogen is one of the great comedic.
And of course, you know, after SCTV, where there was Kids in the Hall, another sketch comedy group creating another show that kind of legendary in Canadian comedy, and also spawned the careers of so many people from that show. You know, still ongoing is This Hour is 22 Minutes, which still pretty good today, but, you know, in its early days
was funnier.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I think it's hard to keep these things going for a long, long time. I think SNL is an example of that, where, you know, the early years were amazing, and it's been up and down, and they have good years and bad years, and I think it's really great that it's still going.
Family Guy. I mean,
but, like, you know, you can't have it. You can't.
I think it's
be strong every year. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I still keep interrupting you. I think part of it is just kind of finding your voice, right? I think the early voice of Canadian comedy, there's a kind of Trailer Park Boys kind of aspect to it, where there's kind of, we as Canadians are kind of the rural kind of the hicks, the rural podunk, looking up all these kind of big city American things and being amazed, and that's so much comedic value. And now, obviously, that kind of mind has been a little bit exhausted, and I don't think Canadian comedy has quite found a new voice, a new vantage point that lets us exploit the same sort of vein of comedic humor. And I hope they do.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned Trailer Park Boys, another hilarious Canadian program. And then there's others. There's Letterkenny. Shoresy is another one that's sort of a Letterkenny spin-off.
Kind of the same spirit.
Pardon me?
Letterkenny is kind of the same spirit.
Yeah. And then the Shoresy, which is a hockey-based one, they were actually just had a tour coming through here in Vancouver just last Monday, where the cast of Shoresy they tour as a hockey team, and then they play local. In this case, they played sort of the Canucks alumni team.
Oh, really? Okay.
So they played, you know, retired Canucks players at a hockey game, and of course they play the game, but it's also a performance because all the Shoresy characters are all playing in character as they play the game. They're mic'd up so you can hear what they're saying and talking to each other. So it's sort of, but it's also, you know, they also actually play the game. It's not like in a scripted, as I understand it anyway, it's not like the game is scripted. They're still playing, but all the characters are playing in character. And it, I didn't go myself, but some friends went and they had a blast.
I mean, absolutely. I think, first of all, any kind of entertainment, whether that's sports or, you know, comedy or film, anything, is first of all, it's an ongoing conversation, right?
Yeah.
You know, the back and forth, the ping pong. I think in the early days, you know, and there's so much hockey-based stuff in the early days. But now, maybe in the future, there's hockey. Obviously, hockey itself has become much more diverse. You know, heated rivalry, obviously, has become a very popular phenomenon. But also, there's other things in Canada now. There's also the Raptors. There's Drake. I mean, there's got to be some comedic value to be